Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Today's guest is Nicola Charlotte from Nicola Charlotte Coaching. And I first came across Nicola when I was researching about starting up my own business, my own marketing consultancy. And the reason that I landed on Nick to work with in terms of a business and mindset coach is because I didn't have a clue how to sell. I'm a marketer. And Nicola was producing lots of amazing content around the whole sales strategy, the sales process that really aligned with the gaps that I felt that I had and needed to start up my own business. So we embarked on this journey, and she's also supported me in tons of mindset work and business coaching since. So we thought it was a no-brainer to invite her on the podcast to talk about a really important topic around becoming unstuck. Welcome, Nicola.
Thank you so much. Very much looking forward to our conversation.
Us too. So as we start all podcasts with our weird work moments of the week, Alice, what is yours?
Mine's a little bit of a meta moment, not meta in the sense of Mark Zuckerberg, but meta with a lowercase m. One of the things that turns out when you start a podcast is that lots of other people from other podcasts start reaching out to you and saying, oh, this is really interesting. Can we chat about this sort of crossover and the topics that we're discussing and guests on each other's shows and things like that? So I had one of those today. Ended up speaking to a guy that, you know, looking at his LinkedIn, we had very little in common, lives in a completely different part of the UK from me. And within the first 2 minutes, realized that we are from about 5 minutes away from each other in Chicago. So small world. So that was a bit weird. How about you, Dan?
That is weird. And the world gets smaller, hey. Mine was a really strange one because I was trying to install some IT software. It was taking a lot longer than I and the person anticipated, and it was well beyond lunchtime. I was hungry, so I just had to turn my screen off, my camera off, mute my microphone, and made my entire lunch and ate it whilst this whole process was going on. And I even cut my hand open getting the stone out of the avocado, like absolute first world problem there. But it just really made me think of how like weird work is now. Like all of that happened whilst I was technically working, and it just blew my mind that he didn't know that I had injured myself and ate my lunch. And so I had a smile about it. What about you, Nicola?
So I've gone kind of like weirdly wonderful. Nothing strange has happened, but it was a couple of days ago. I had a couple of client calls in the morning, and then I was going to meet some friends for lunch, then go to see my parents and go to an art gallery. And in between that happened, someone had booked in a discovery call to find out work with me. I was like on the bus replying to client messages on my phone. And it was just this weirdly wonderful thing of like, this is my work, but this is also my life at the same time. And the fact that it's such a blended world, I think, especially when you work for yourself, and I can really do 90% of my work from my phone, that it's just this like weirdly wonderful scenario where I was able to enjoy things in my day, but also carry on work on my business and like seeing momentum building even when I was like out having fun. So
love that. It can be weirdly wonderful. It's not always weird on the other end of the spectrum. And the other question that we always ask our guests is, are you where you thought you'd be in your career right now?
Definitely not. I was always someone who never really knew what I wanted to do. I always say I was like very much a middle of the class kind of student. I never had like a big vision of I want to be X or I want to work for Y company. And so where I am today is definitely not where I imagined, but in a very good way. I think I never believed it would have been possible to be where I am at the age that I am doing what I'm doing. I think the pandemic has obviously changed that a lot as well. Firmly no, but in a good way.
And can just for the listeners, like I know a bit more about your career journey. Can you tell us a bit about starting in the corporate world in a more traditional, you know, air quotes there, to where you are now as a coach?
Yes. So I very much followed the kind of traditional route for success. I think looking back, I had this belief that success was a point that you reached in the future if you followed certain points. You know, you hit certain milestones, you tick boxes, you climb the ladder. So even to the extent that whilst I was at university, I was applying for these graduate schemes in the city for kind of banking consulting firms, I had zero interest in those industries, but that's what I thought I should do in order to be successful. And so I followed that path, got a job in London, working in sales and marketing. And I always say it was fine. You know, it was fine. The people that I was working with, I got on with, but I didn't have a sense of fulfillment or purpose or passion with what I was doing. But there were so many myths or kind of misconceptions that I believed in, that you couldn't have a job that you loved and that paid well and that gave you good work-life balance. And that it was really, you were lucky if you had two of those three. And so I was sort of just going through the motions of thinking like, well, this is just kind of the reality that, you know, work is fine and you live for the weekends and that, yeah, not to complain about it too much, even though everyone around me was complaining. And then it got to the point where I was really questioning, like, is this, like, what is this all for? What am I working towards? Like, I just had this sense of being on autopilot in my life, and I wasn't willing to accept that that was it. So I started looking at options outside of my 9-to-5 that I could really just do as like a passion project, as a way of bringing in more fulfillment into my day to day. And that's when I discovered coaching. I hadn't heard of it before. I never worked with a coach. I didn't know anyone who was a coach. And I quite literally was searching on Instagram, like hashtag female life coach or like London life coach, and was reaching out to these people saying, I've come across coaching, I'm thinking about doing a qualification, could I pick your brains and find out a little bit more about what it entails? And had a few conversations, and then really like what I heard, I really like what it stands for, what the kind of principles of coaching are, and could really see myself enjoying it. So I did a qualification. It was about 6 months, very much tapping into kind of like the neuroscience, the mindset, how we think, limiting beliefs, really looking at where you are and where do you want to be and how we work on our mindset in it to enable us to get there. A lot of like subconscious programming and fear work, all super fascinating. So I was doing this alongside my 9-to-5, and then COVID came around. And that's when I suddenly had so much more time to give myself to work on exploring this further beyond just like a passion project. So I started working with clients, very much kind of like testing the waters at this stage. And then about 6 months further down the line, I thought, I need to have more time to be able to take this further. So something has to give, or I'm going to have to make some changes. So I did some consulting work whilst I built up my coaching business. And then about 6 months after that, I was then fully in on my coaching business. And that was about 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting how COVID was one of those moments in our professional lives that was very much a kind of make or break type situation, wasn't it? It really shifted things for people and gave us that time or space, for better or worse, to make some decisions and explore some alternatives. I think one of the interesting things about having you here, and I know this is what we're going to discuss today, but I've just only recently come across an article about talking about the Great Detachment. So it's a Gallup term, kind of coming out the heels of the Great Resignation, which was something that we saw a lot of in the press last year. Great Detachment is the fact that many employees are staying with their organizations, staying with their companies that might have left before, but are increasingly dissatisfied with their positions within those organizations. There's a variety of contributors to why they're staying, of course, but it's all leading to this general feeling of stuckness that I think maybe we traditionally associated with people who are in the wrong career, or maybe really reaching a certain decade in their careers where they might be looking around. I'm talking specifically about sort of maybe 40s, mid-career kind of stage. So maybe we've seen some of that stuckness happen before, but now it seems to be happening across all generations and across all of the workforce. So just curious, first of all, just to get your sense of what those sort of macro issues are that you think might be contributing to this feeling of unstuckness, and then how you've been working with people to explore how to get out of that feeling.
Yeah, I think that the first one that comes to mind is around these like invisible scripts that so many of us live by, myself included in the past. And it's this idea that we have certain rules or conditions or beliefs that are ultimately kind of dictating what we're doing, i.e., I'm too old to pivot careers, or it's too risky for me to change industries, or it's impossible for someone like me to, you know, X, Y, and Z. And it's these invisible scripts, this idea that we're telling ourselves things that, and they all run in the background, they're all kind of subconscious. And that's what keeps people stuck, because they talk themselves out of creating change due to limiting beliefs around what is or isn't possible. And a lot of the time it's because they don't see evidence of people around them or in their community doing similar. And that was definitely the case with me. You know, none of my peers or friends from school, university had left their corporate job to set up their own business. So of course that then plants seeds of doubt of what is possible. And so we think, I'll just wait out another 6 months, or I'll wait until my next promotion, or I'll wait until X, and then before you know it, another 2-3 years have passed and we're still where we are, still feeling as stuck.
And I assume there's ways to become unstuck while staying in place, right? Because I think there are some very real pressures that people are facing. I mean, I think, you know, inflation, job market instability, things like that, that are making people want to stay in their jobs. Whereas worries about AI, like maybe I should hold on to my job because actually freelancers are being more threatened by AI, things like that. So there are definitely some very real contributors to people feeling stuck. But are you talking to people primarily about finding a way to change those beliefs and believing they can take a leap? Or are you also talking to them about how they can find and reignite some of that purpose and meaning within their current roles?
Yeah, definitely both. As you say, it's not a case of, oh, if you leave your corporate job, you will feel unstuck. So a lot of people don't want to. One of the first steps is creating space to give yourself time for some reflection. I think in an age where everything's so fast paced, we're already always thinking about the next thing. Rarely do we give ourselves time to reflect on the situation, whether that's how we're feeling, whether it's the work that we're doing on a day-to-day basis, whether that's what's draining our energy or what's like recharging us. And allowing ourselves that time for reflection helps us to kind of pick up little pieces of evidence of, okay, this is what I am enjoying. This is what's causing resistance or frustration or overwhelm. And then we can, you know, something that I do with my clients, which is super simple, is like two columns of these energizers and drains. And what we ideally want to do is have more things in the energizers column and gradually take away those things in the drain column. And that could be everything from the people that we spend our time with to our morning routines to the day-to-day tasks within our job. And I would argue that all of those, to a degree, are changeable, that there's a degree of flexibility. It's often that we have to spot them and identify what those are and then have conversations or make decisions or implement boundaries that are going to help us with making some sort of progress.
Okay, so once we've sat down and given ourselves some space to look at the things that give us energy or don't give us energy, what is then the best way to move forward? So if you're speaking to somebody who's now got a good sense of the things that actually I hate my employee, my colleague, that's actually my biggest issue, is that this person's draining my energy. How do we then move forward from that place?
I would then sort of almost break those down into individual actions or individual next steps, because it can feel really overwhelming when they are like bigger pressing issues. They're not as easy, it's not as simple as having one conversation. And I think a lot of the times, women especially, but everyone, we feel like we have to figure it out on our own. It's that kind of like lone wolf mentality of, I'm super capable, I'm high achieving, so I've got to come to the solution alone. But actually speaking to someone, whether that's a colleague, a friend, a partner, someone that is almost detached from that situation, to help you see different perspectives, to help you come up with different ideas, to help you alleviate some of that pressure and overwhelm that you might be feeling, is a really great first step. Because when we're very much in the problem or in the situation, we can have that tunnel vision where it's harder to look at slightly different views on the situation. And so sharing it with someone else, and then coming up with a bit of an action plan and saying, okay, these are the three steps I could take that would help me. These are three ideas that I could implement. These are three people that I could speak to. And then going through it like that and just working at it one step at a time.
Do you find that certain people are more likely to feel this way? So is it men or women? Is it older people or younger people? Like, where are those trends falling in terms of your clients?
So I only work with women. So I wouldn't be able to compare necessarily. The majority of the women that I work with are high achieving, driven, kind of a lot of them tend to be perfectionists. And so it's that pressure that they put on themselves to have to have the answers. But also a lot of the times it's that externally, everything looks great. You know, on paper, they have the success, but internally there's those feelings of overwhelm, misalignment, emptiness, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, all of those things. So then asking for help can then be the most challenging part, because the sort of facade can often be very different to those internal feelings or the internal dialogues.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember I did some training once on basically stress reduction in the workplace. And one of the things that we talked at length about was type A personalities. And the impact that having a type A personality has on your own stress levels and your own ability to get in your own way about things. I mean, is that something that you see quite a lot as well with sort of high achieving women?
Definitely. And getting comfortable with asking for help, which often the times is something that they have rarely done. And recognizing that being vulnerable is a sign of strength, not weakness. And actually that's how you forge connections, and that's how you build relatability and those relationships, because people get to understand you on a deeper level than the sort of surface level success that we are often so quick to kind of show off or talk about without daring to kind of let the emotions or the other sides come in.
So what do you think are the most common myths that you come across from your clients? So what are the stories they tell themselves, the narratives they tell themselves that most frequently hold them back?
Say, well, it varies between sort of business owners and women who work in corporate. I think one of the most common beliefs, and this applies to both, is like the harder I work or the longer hours I put in, the more successful I'll be. And that isn't sustainable. I mean, I think there's definitely argument to say that at certain times of your career or at certain stages of your business, the hours are needed to put in to be able to see growth. However, on a long-term basis, I would disagree, because our energy is such a valuable currency. And if we're showing up depleted, we can't focus, we can't handle those unexpected challenges that come up because we don't have the energy, that's then going to cause longer-term kind of damage than if we show up with feeling more energized because we've had boundaries and because we recognize that actually we don't need to work 12-hour days in order to be like reach our fullest potential. So there's definitely a balance, whatever the word balance means. I appreciate that that's quite a subjective term and not always feasible, but that's definitely one of the biggest beliefs that I think does hold people back, even though they feel like that's going to be the answer to them accelerating in their career.
When we first started this podcast, we originally explored the name the Pivot Playground, because Alice and I have both pivoted out of the workplace and the corporate environment. And when we went into we knew that was almost too niche, because not everybody will want to do that. Some might, but there may be other avenues when they're getting that mid-career point that they want to explore, and. I asked you if the majority of your clients were thinking about pivoting out or had pivoted out, and you said, no, not at all. Could you just give a bit more color around the types of things that they are looking at, such as side hustles that they're wanting to grow within the businesses, things like that?
Yeah, definitely. So the woman that I'm working with within corporate, one of the main focuses there is really that career progression. So helping more women get into more senior leadership positions, but doing so with a sense of authenticity, of leading with their values, of understanding like, how do I show up as a leader? And actually, I was recently working with a client, and she, within their firm, they use like the color profiles to help understand how different personalities work, communicate, like to be managed. So, and she, a lot of the leaders within her business were red profiles. And she was like, I hardly have any red within my profile. Does this mean I'm not going to be a successful leader? Like, does this mean that I'm not cut out for leadership? And what we came to realize through having these conversations is she can still be a super successful leader in her own way. There were certain traits that she wanted to develop to help her, i.e. assertiveness, decisiveness, like strong communication, those sorts of things. But she had those within her. Like, those are skills that we get to develop and learn. So that's comes back to that kind of piece around feeling stuck, is there might be skills, or there might be areas that you want to strengthen, you want to put more time into to help you feel unstuck. But it's often that reflection and kind of having the conversation with other people that helps you realize that. So that was one thing. There's other women I work with who are working corporate. They're very happy there, but they have time or resource or energy or a passion that they want to also fulfill. So that might be developing a side hustle or a passion project that they do alongside their business. It's not necessarily going to take over from their corporate salary, but it's still an additional revenue stream. It's a kind of creative outlet. It's something that they enjoy, that they can do to take their time away from working. But it's not necessarily wanting to leave corporate to set up a business, because as you mentioned at the beginning, Alice, like, a lot of people want that stability, want that consistency. And for their lifestyle, actually, that is the better option. So it's very varied. It's really so dependent on the individual.
So just to make this about me for a minute, I'm just thinking about all of this in the context of where I am. So I'm just going to throw this out, and maybe you could give me some sort of light coaching as we're sitting here. Because I think there are, as I had mentioned in the beginning, there are so many issues right now that I would think that anyone was listening would think, yes, but these things are happening in the workplace that are so much bigger than my own mindset. And you might argue that that's not true, that actually it is ultimately all about mindset. But there are so many things that are out there that are restricting my ability to move. I'll give you myself as an example. So I am 46, turning 47 this month, which is for some reason quite terrifying. I don't know, something about that number, I don't like it. and I recognize just how much time I have left to work, which isn't a great deal in the grand scheme, but also it's a really expensive time in my life. I've got kids to pay for and blah blah blah. So I do need to be able to be a sort of good earner for the next sort of 10 to 15 years. I've set up a business about 12 years ago. It's been really successful, but for me, the writing's on the wall, right? So I can see that a lot of what I do will be replaced by AI. It is being replaced by AI all the time. I work in kind of brand and communications. I can see that this is becoming something that, you know, I can rely on the AI tools now to help me be faster and smarter, but ultimately they will overtake me. And I'm trying to figure out what I do now. And to be honest with you, I do feel a little bit stuck for some issues that I believe are somewhat out of my control. So without kind of giving me a whole free coaching session here, where would you suggest that I start? Because the AI reality feels very real for me. And I would imagine it does for a lot of people who would be listening.
Yeah. And really good question. As you say, I'm sure a lot of people resonate with that feeling of like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed. I'm feeling a bit like almost at a crossroads. So my question first would be, what are the options? Like, in looking at your current situation, recognizing the changes that are happening in the industry, what are the possible routes that you could take?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the answer there is I could come up with something completely new that I feel like would usher me through this period of change and would use my skills to sort of support what's inevitably going to happen in the workforce moving forward. So that's sort of option one. Option two is stick with this and try and ride it out and just try to keep using AI tools to continue to stay ahead, maybe broaden my network within my current business right now, see if I can do a bit better with that. And option three is, I don't know, do something entirely different, start over. I have no idea. Coach, maybe. I don't know.
And I
so,
think,
yeah, but that's a really good place to start.
Yeah. And there are always options. I think that's always important to remember. And obviously, as I say, I don't know the ins and outs of your business or kind of how it works. My initial thinking is there a way that you can incorporate AI and like leverage AI alongside your skill sets? Because whilst there are roles where AI will replace the human in the job, there are still many that actually the human element cannot be replaced by AI. Maybe 10 years down the line, it's very hard to know where we'll be in 10 years. But I suppose, and that makes me remember, you know, a lot of time we do catastrophize about the future before that's even happened. And whilst we want to kind of future-proof ourselves and our career, when there's so many unknowns, it's almost like, is that the best use of my time and energy right now? Or is that causing more overwhelm and stress? If I look at the next 1 to 3 years, what would make most sense now, while still keeping an eye out for the changes that are happening in the industry? And then kind of coming back and doing that check-in of like, where am I now? Is this still the best route to go down? Do I need to kind of start looking elsewhere? And working through it like that.
Yeah, that's great advice.
You broke this down so nicely. So understanding the bigger picture, defining what fulfillment looks like to you, you know, Alice, in that sense, breaking it down into smaller steps to avoid that overwhelm and focusing on the manageable changes, but then recognizing that it's not all or nothing. So recognizing, catastrophizing, like I am that person, mm-hmm. I am 1 to 100, the world's ending type thing. You know, you picked one, it doesn't always need to be a career shift. Is it something untapped in there? Is it something else that's going to fulfill you whilst you continue with what you're doing as well? And it's tricky because of the world we live in. It's social media, it's that gratification culture and external validation that we now look for because it's part of our day-to-day. It's the world we actually live in. So it's almost like we're stuck on the hamster wheel. So I can understand why this feeling of being stuck is happening everywhere.
I think it's a tricky one because it's like there so much of that is true. Yet I do think there are so many people, and this isn't like to throw shade on people, but that like to run with this narrative of, you know, AI is taking over and the job market's so saturated and, you know, all of these things. And okay, to a degree that is true, but it's also being mindful of who we spend our time with and who we are having these conversations with. Like, I've got friends who love to catastrophize. There's always a drama. There's always something going wrong. You know, the kind of glass is half empty. And you leave those people being like, gosh, that was a little bit draining. But then you also have people who see the opportunities, who think really innovatively, really creatively, like love coming up with new ideas and see the benefits or the kind of positives that can come from these shifts and changes. So in situations where kind of career-wise you're feeling stuck or there's changes within the industry, also I think having conversations with people who are maybe in similar positions to see what they're thinking, to, I don't know, maybe it's hard depending on kind of what that situation is, but one of my clients, she's like a head of people within her company. And she was talking about this kind of AI / HR event that she was going to go to next week, where they bring together loads of head of people roles and have, it's like a summit talking about how AI can be used to support them in their roles. And she was like, I'm so excited to go because I really want to understand how I can use AI to help me in my role, to help improve the company as a result, but also speak to other people in similar roles to see what they're thinking, to see how they're using AI. And I thought, that's so cool that those things exist, because that's actually how we can come together and collaborate and come up with new ideas and new perspectives on situations that could otherwise feel quite overwhelming.
It's so interesting. So our final episode of series one was on AI, and Alice and I left enlightened, terrified, all the things rolled into one. You know, the machines are coming, jobs are gone type thing. And I keep going back to some of the things that were said in there in the data and thinking, oh my goodness, like it's over for marketers. And I've just had a call with our global people director at Macro, and we were talking about lunch and learn for our people about AI application, how we're doing it for our clients, what we're doing it internally for processes and macro, but maybe how some individuals are using it. And I was really open. I said, look, I'd never used ChatGPT until I started at Macro, because I've always been in a team, headed up a team, and have not needed to use it. Whereas at Macro, it's me and I'm 3 days a week and I'm using it every day and it's amazing. And she just looked and went, you didn't use it before Macro? And I went, no. And she said, oh my God, I keep having this fear that somebody's going to say, tomorrow AI's gone, and I couldn't live my personal life as well as, and I really like laugh because Alice and I were like, ah, AI, but she was terrified that it was going to be like, oh, hey, it's just a joke. It's not here anymore. And I loved that. I felt so relieved. I was like, oh, people do really see, you know, how this is enhancing lives in a certain way, in so many ways. I'm with you. It's that awful.
I think there's important things you said there around connection too, and how the importance of connecting with the right people. And I was reading the other day that one of the things that's driving this disengagement across the workforce is, of course, hybrid work and remote working. So I read a statistic that said 57% of hybrid remote workers in the UK feel they're missing out on promotions, 44% feel like they're disconnected from leadership, making career growth harder, which obviously, like, if you're not in the room with people, you're not actually connecting on a human level, then you don't really get that sense of where you sit within the broader context. Is that something that you feel like is also driving some of this feeling of stuckness?
Yeah, I think so. It's the sort of hyper independence that especially the solo founders that I work with who are working from home and who have gotten so used to doing everything themselves. And, you know, I have definitely been guilty of it in the past. I mean, I live in London, but I work from home a lot of the time. I do go to a co-working space every now and then. But when there are events in the evening that, you know, are sort of starting at 7 p.m. and I think, gosh, I'm going to have to commute into London. I don't want to do that, you know, and then you quickly make up excuses. And that's another day where you haven't gone to an event. Or, I mean, I live with my husband, so I do have personal interaction, but so much of my work is online and it can be very easy to get comfortable, I guess, in that environment, forgetting that 5 years ago it was normal to be commuting two times a day. So I think if people aren't careful, that can be a reason for feeling stuck. And it does come back to ultimately having to take the responsibility to recognize, like, this isn't healthy, or this isn't working, or this isn't aligning. What can I do? Like, it's my responsibility to choose to do something differently. And we always do have that choice, even if those choices feel scary, they're daunting, they really get us out of our comfort zone. It does come down to us. And I really do firmly believe that. It's not to say that we can't bring on help from others to support us through a transition, a change, whatever it might be. But it has to start with us deciding that we want some sort of a different outcome.
Yeah, actually, yesterday my husband and I were talking about how travel is a muscle. And I think during COVID in particular, older people were home more often, and maybe that cut their confidence a little bit, maybe for a lot of people, but particularly for older people. My mother-in-law certainly has developed a little bit more nervousness around traveling and things like that, because she didn't for such a critical period where it was so important to her confidence to continue doing so. And actually, it's true, you know, any of us who've sort of traveled internationally, overseas, into contexts where we feel slightly uncomfortable, if you don't do it for a long time, you do feel more daunted when you decide to do it again. It's similar for career development stuff, I think, and that it is a muscle, right? You have to be in the room, you have to be having the conversations, you have to be networking, you have to be out there. If we don't push ourselves out of our comfort zones, if we don't force ourselves to be making those connections, then we're going to lose a sense of that empowerment in our professional paths as well.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's that kind of familiarity, the routine, the feeling comfortable, and it's the easy option. So it's not surprising that the majority of the time, that's the option that we choose, and we therefore make up excuses or kind of justify, like, why it's not the right time, while we'll wait 6 months, while we'll wait till we get our bonus, you know, or while we'll wait until we land our next client, depending on, you know, the path that you're on. But it's recognizing the growth or the opportunity beyond that initial fear, or that sits beyond the comfort zone, and saying, like, it's going to be worth it when. I always think, you know, it's like making the decisions from the future version of you, you know, 6 months down the line. It's like, if I was already there and it had already happened and I'd already seen success, what decisions would I be making, or what would I be telling my younger self? And it's making decisions from like where you want to be versus where you are now, which I just think is, it's easier said than done, but it's a good thing to keep in mind when coming, like when these bigger decisions are in front of you, and deciding to go with that version versus the one that like is probably made from a place of fear.
I touched on it a little bit earlier about my age, but I read this statistic the other day as well, which said 55% of UK professionals aged 35 to 50 feel they've hit a career ceiling. That's a really high percentage, right? Many feel too old to change paths, but too young to settle. And so then you're thinking about the sort of second careers, as we've just discussed. Is there any specific advice you would give to people at this age? What would you tell somebody in their 40s about how to feel less stuck and how to move away from that career ceiling?
Well, it does remind me of a conversation that Dan, you and I had when sort of making decisions of the business and career and what choice was ultimately going to kind of be best. And I think one of the things that we spoke about, which, and feel free to jump in, proved to be helpful was coming back to like, A, your values and what's important, like at the stage of life you are now, but B, like priorities. So is it that, you know, financial stability is the highest of importance? Is it having flexibility so that you can spend more time with your kids? Is it being in a job that really fulfills you? And then using those to help you understand, okay, this is my priority. This isn't as important. It's a nice to have. And then looking at those to help you make the decision, because sometimes the grass is greener and sometimes we get excited by kind of shiny object syndrome because, you know, Sarah, our best mate or our neighbor, you know, she's set up a business and she's suddenly earning double what she was in her corporate job. You know, all those sort of things can then lead us astray. So it's coming back to your own values, what's of priority to you at this stage, and then recognizing what the options are to help you make a decision.
Yeah. And just to like add my own experience on there, like I made the choice to leave a full-time commuting role because it wasn't working for me. It was creating too much pressure and too much stress on the family life. And I stepped out of that because I knew I couldn't do it anymore. But that didn't mean it relieved one stress and pressure, but it created another because we still got mortgage to pay, got nursery fees to pay, household, all of those things. And it really, you know, held the mirror up to me, and Nicola worked with me really well on this, of what are my values and the priorities. And I remember reeling lots off, and when you relayed them back to me, like, do you realize how much they're clashing? You know, you do actually have to focus in on here. This isn't a 5 to 10 year thing, but actually what's the priority for the next 12 months, maybe 12 to 24 months. It doesn't need to be a forever thing. And I think going back to people who are feeling stuck around midlife, I know I felt this. Like, my ambition when I was 20, fresh out of uni, was I wanted to be a marketing director, you know, and I got there. Well, actually, I'm not there. I've been head of marketing, but I've reported into CEO. So there's not been anyone higher than me in that sense. And it's when you get there, it's like, oh, is that as fulfilling as I thought it was maybe going to feel? Is that still the ambition? And it goes back to that, what is the ambition? What does fulfillment look like? But are there any other life priorities that are also really driving it as well? And when you map and lay all of that out and almost put the practical strategy around it to get that clarity, that's when things became really clear for me. And also just knowing that it wasn't forever. So I'm probably going to rework on this again in 6 to 12 months time, because things may shift again and things may, you know, there may be new opportunities on the table. So yeah, that whole questioning your ambition piece and then working on your values and priorities was just amazing.
What is the relationship between fulfillment and purpose?
Oh, that is a good question. Fulfillment and purpose.
I've heard you use the word fulfillment quite a lot. I'm just wondering how you would define those with your clients.
I think they're probably semi-interchangeable in the sense of having a role or having a job or living a life that is fulfilling. Like, to me, that is, it's energizing. It's you have a sense of I'm where I'm meant to be, or I'm creating an impact, or I'm really in that like flow zone. And then that would then for create purpose. But I think if you have purpose, you're also fulfilled. So maybe they are synonyms.
Can you feel fulfilled by a job if it doesn't also give you purpose? I'm asking that because I think we've all been in jobs that we didn't feel like we're going to change the world for the better, like we didn't think there was necessarily a great deal of impact, and yet there were things about the job that made us feel fulfilled day to day because they were challenging, because they used our problem-solving skills, because people respected us when we did them, that sort of thing. So yeah, just curious how you'd sort of make that distinction when you're looking at those priorities with your clients, when you're asking them, is it about fulfillment? Is it about, where do purpose and fulfillment sort of sit on that? And what are people asking for? Are they asking to feel fulfilled, or are they asking for a job that gives them genuine purpose?
Well, I think that's where it's so dependent on the individual. Maybe it's recognizing that, okay, at this stage of my life, having a job that fulfills me isn't as important as a job that pays me well. Or maybe it's that I want to feel a sense of purpose in what I do because I'm really passionate about certain causes or creating impact. But maybe that's doing it in an industry that I'm not fulfilled by. So it's sort of recognizing. Yeah, what, where, how important each one of those is for you, and then what you're kind of willing to deprioritize depending on the opportunities and the situation.
Okay. And where can people find you if they've been so engaged by our conversation? Where can they find you?
Yes, so either on LinkedIn, Nicola Charlotte, or over on Instagram at Nicola Charlotte Coaching. And I'm also have my own podcast called It's Not Luck, which is all around like dissecting people's success and achievements, but looking at it from, what's got you there? The mindset, the action. It's not luck, essentially. It's sort of work and mindset. So anyway, that's available to listen to, and yeah, feel free to get in touch with any questions.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks
Thanks
so
so much for
much.
joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any Work is Weird moments to share, please find us on LinkedIn and let us know what they were. In the meantime, have a wonderfully weird week, and we look forward to seeing you.